Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. I've got the Betty Boop scratch-off tickets. We'll be giving these away at Conrad's Crabs this week on Wednesday, special Wednesday edition of our Maryland Crab Cake Tour. We've taken the G&A Coney Island date. We've moved that into next month. We'll have a makeup date on that. We had a little issue on Friday and getting that done. We're doing it in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill Industries, as well as our friends at Window Nation. And I'll be telling you more about both of our great sponsors. This guy got together and sought me out at the Super Bowl. We sat down and talked about the baseball work stoppage and all the things that were going on in January and February and March. Now we're into April and we got like a real baseball season, but I want to mix in a little bit of soccer with this guy because he was out tweeting last week about the Baltimore-Washington bid. He's an interesting cat in that he covered all of the Angelos Lerner Washington Nationals birthing rights back in 2004, 5, 6, 7 at the Washington Times. He now covers the world of business at Sport Business. He is our longtime friend and checking in from closer to Yankee Stadium than Oriole Park at Camden Yards. Welcome, Eric Fisher, one of our defending baseball champions, back to talk a little soccer and a little baseball. But this is an interesting Baltimore-Washington thing, right? For two guys that have been covering this market and the DMV as separate entities for so long that we couldn't figure out one baseball team or one football team or one stadium, or I guess we have one hockey, one basketball team. But this World Cup soccer bid is a fascinating play for Baltimore specifically, where we thought, we're never going to get games here, you know, no chance of that. Well, things changed a lot last week, and I know it's Sport Business. Right. This is what you guys cover, man.
Yeah, so what's happened here is basically Baltimore and Washington have put themselves together to make the best possible bid as a joint entity. It is very common for World Cup hosts, and just to sort of back up, Canada, United States, and Mexico will be hosting the 2026 World Cup, and FIFA is about to name within the next handful of weeks and months the sites for those games in 2026. It is very common for capital cities and host countries to get some piece of the action. But the problem is that with Washington, you've got FedEx Field that has long been notorious for having poor field conditions. This has been an issue with the Commanders and all of their various iterations and identities in terms of having poor field conditions. Anytime you've had soccer friendlies there, it's been an issue. And FIFA really takes great care to make sure that the venues where these games are going to be held have really good field conditions. And so what ended
up happening, 126 degrees in Qatar.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. and there's going to be all sort of special considerations there for the venues there for the 2022 World Cup. But with the 26 process here, Baltimore and Washington sort of figured the best way to get a piece of the action, and they're competing for big new stadiums like SoFi Stadium in LA, where we were for the Super Bowl, Allegiant Stadium in Vegas. You've got great facilities in Orlando, a number of other places that are vying for pieces of this schedule as well. For Baltimore and Washington, what they did is they put their heads together, and the best way to do this is concentrate the actual game action at M&T Bank Stadium, where the Ravens obviously play, better conditions there, and then do fan events on the National Mall in D.C., and you sort of get the best of both worlds. And in a lot of ways, this is where I sort of feel to hold here, that this is part of what was contemplated literally 20 years ago when Baltimore and Washington were working together trying to get the 2012 Olympics. Now, that obviously ended up going to London, but this sort of regional collaboration and sort of putting the best of both cities together, we saw this two decades ago, literally.
Well, the reason this is big for me, right, because I did the Ronaldinho game, you know, when they had to sell out. Tickets were $300 for a friendly to get in. I mean, I have never seen demand for any event quite like that first event. Now, the second time around when they brought Man City in, it wasn't the same as having Chelsea here in the beginning. But I'll say this, for wherever Baltimore sits on the wire and on the new HBO show and the perception of whatever Baltimore would be, in this particular case, and I have Marty Conway on all the time, you know, and Marty's been on camels over in Qatar, you know, working with World Cup people. And he said all along, they're going to be very hard pressed to not have Washington. Like, they kick off the World Cup in France and Paris. They kick off the World Cup in the UK and London. They kick off the capitals. That's what they do. And he said that, you know, they've already committed that SoFi and MetLife and, you know, these big Jerry's World, these big stadia where they can make more money, that that's all well and good. But to not have the nation's capital involved in the World Cup bid is crazy. So you say, got to have it. Now, you just said, got to have it. And this is where I want to, like, massage my brain, because I went into my wife on Friday when this went down, and I'm like, they're really going to get games. Like, I like, it was kind of reminds me of when we got the NFL team. Like, I was pinching, like, we're not really getting the Cleveland Browns. There's no way that's going to happen. Like, that can't happen. And this is one of the thoughts where I'm like, not only are they going to get a bid, they're probably going to get, like, six games in Baltimore, because DC has been declared per stadium non grata, whatever that, you know, that they're
something
not
good, maybe like quarters. I mean, I'm just speculating here, but maybe, you know, not just, you know, early round robin kind of stuff, maybe a little later on too.
I mean, I'm a little pinch me about all of this, because when I heard this news, look, I've heard Terry Hazeltine talk about they're going to do this. I went to that awful press conference, that dog and pony show, is 112 degrees, and that poor Dick Cass is out there melting. Everybody's melting. And I thought, we're not getting the World Cup here. I mean, because I've been to the Houston Stadium. I know where the money in the NFL is for Bob Kraft. I can start to do the math on Mexico and Canada and what's going to happen there. And I also felt like, well, Cincinnati's not going to get games, and they're probably not going to go everywhere in Florida, but Orlando, there's a draw to Orlando and Disney World, and they have hotels, and everybody in the world would want to go and say, well, base in Orlando for 12 days, live there and fly to Houston for a game, or fly to Mexico City for a game. If you're that kind of fan that you're putting the money, because I was that guy. I went to Germany in 06. I spent 12 days in Amsterdam, driving into Germany, driving into Gelsenkirchen and Dortmund and Kaiserslautern to see the US team play. I had plans on doing that in 2010 in South Africa. So I know how these people travel and what it represents. But when I heard that not only was DC and Baltimore combining, and I thought, well, that's good, we'll get a game or two. My first thought was, well, they're being nice to us and they're using another city, and that's good. But why does DC need Baltimore? And to your point, they hate the stadium. So all of a sudden, for the first time in ever, in my 31 years of being here, the Baltimore to DC thing, we've always played the bastard stepchild and the kicked around little brother. And even what happened with the Nationals and Angelos, which you and I go through all the time about how we've gotten screwed. This is the one time where I'm like, proximity is power. And we have the stadium and we have the downtown location. And this might really work out. There might really be World Cup games here in 26. And it's not some pipe dream from a bureaucrat. This is like, feels like it's really going to happen. Am I getting too excited, Eric?
No, not at all. No, I think because again, being part of that nation capital region is really part of it. You also referenced some successful friendlies in the past. You also know better than I do that, yeah, there's Jerry's World, there's SoFi and all that, but you know, M&T Bank Stadium is a very solid, well-run facility. Sight lines are good. Conditions are good. Field quality is good. Operationally, you know, you have games there. It's just going to work. And to a certain extent, just going to work and not having any problems, that's a good thing for FIFA and for anybody. And so to have a very solid, well-run facility where things are just going to get done and done correctly, and obviously being 45 minutes up the road from the nation's capital, these are all real strong attributes.
And there's nobody in D.C. getting upset about this, and it's a big party for Baltimore. Like, this would be the biggest thing that Baltimore's ever had, ever, not close. And it just kind of came in a news dump on Friday, and I'm sort of picking my listen, Eric, when I read it on Twitter without reading it, my first thought is, oh, we're going to get two games. That's cute. That's nice. They'll put six games down there, two here. They make us feel a part of it. Good for us. Maybe we'll have the French team stay at the Four Seasons and practice over at Pete Carinci's place at UMBC. Like, I was thinking like that. This is becoming a little bit more than just getting a dessert here or just getting an appetizer. We're going to get some meat and potatoes here. And I have been skeptical from the beginning, but maybe from the beginning, they always realize this was the real play. The real play wasn't Baltimore as a bid. The real play was Baltimore as a safety for DC because they can't embarrass themselves down in DC.
Well, also keep in mind that this is all happening where Dan Snyder is at a historical weak point. You raise a very good point that there's no hue and cry from DC about this because A, everybody knows the facility issues with FedEx because they've been going on for years. This is not a new thing. But who's going to cry about this down in DC? Certainly not Dan Snyder. He's got a whole lot of other problems right now, and certainly no legislator is going to go to bat for him for the very same reason. So there is absolutely no objective because not only does it just work on the merits, but you have all these other issues coming into play as well.
Eric Fisher is here. He is at Sport Business. We usually talk baseball. We've talked football and NASCAR. We've talked all sorts of things over the course of time. But this World Cup bid, give me a global scale on this for people who ain't soccer people. And when these games would happen, and the larger picture for even a traditionalist like myself that remembers 24 teams and the round robin and how many groups there are and the group of death, and all of that stuff. This is an expanded field. There's a lot more games that are going to be played in 2026, in addition to the U.S. being involved, and probably. And I'm going to have Marty Conway on later because he speaks to the history of all this. It probably would mean the U.S. would kick off the whole thing here. Like Baltimore may be the beginning of the kickoff of the World Cup in 26. And that would be – I'd need to go take a cold shower, Eric, if this happened. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe this is – as I sat in 2006 in Zurich, Switzerland, and saw festivals outside and saw a million people on the wall and the water in Berlin, you know, watching games on giant TVs on barges. I dreamed in this harbor of a soccer festival one day where maybe one day we would get a game or two or do something. This is a bigger dream than I think we even had here. And the fact that the World Cup's actually coming back in 2010, I threw a party. Comcast still hasn't paid the bill. So if you know anybody there, tell them they owe me 10 grand. I threw a soccer festival in Baltimore County called it. It was when the U.S. played England and Argentina played that morning in the 2010 World Cup. So it was a Saturday morning. We had a plaza. We had a giant TV, all the things that I dreamed of doing here. And at that particular point, Terry Hazeltine gave me a World Cup jersey that's since fallen apart, but it was a legit jersey that had a 22 on it. And the reason it had a 22 on it was they believed the 2022 World Cup was in the mind's eye and it was 18 or 22, but they were pulling for 22.
They were going for it.
Yeah. And then 18 and 22 were all corrupted by bags of money and literally international criminals. Imagine that with Russia getting a bid on that. Imagine that with Qatar with no stadia, a country that's this big, wealth that's this big, and 125 degrees in the middle of summer.
No infrastructure to run large scale events.
But FIFA was so corrupt for so long. And I would dare I say still probably is to some degree, but this has been cracked at since 1994. And the fact that Baltimore somehow is going to before the football stadium was dreamt of in 1998, or the Ravens were a pipe dream in Art Modell's eyes. All of this happened back in 94. They had a World Cup here and we've been trying that much longer and against all sorts of odds and corruption to get the World Cup back here.
Yeah, it's a huge deal. And again, to sort of speak to the Washington Baltimore piece of this, you know, there's not a lot of folks, like you out there speaking of 1+1=3 with the two cities. I mean, Ted Leonsis tries to speak to this, but, you know, you guys don't have a lot of company in that regard. And I do feel like when done well for major events like this, 1+1 can equal 3. And, you know, and again, to your point, in a way where Baltimore is not just an add-on, but meaningfully part of that equation.
Well, the meaningfully part of it is we would get all the we get all the jam, right? You know, I mean, if the games are here, then the World Cup's here, period, right?
Like, well, yeah, I mean, that thing on the mall is going to be a big deal as well, too. I mean, you know, yes, the games, it's all great. It's all great. It's all gravy. It's, you know, it's all good stuff. And yeah, it's going to be a huge moment. And it's important to remember that this is the world's biggest sporting event. We, you know, we love our Super Bowl here. We love our World Series and they're a big deal, but particularly if you put this in the context of the issues that the Olympics have had and the entire Olympic movement, not just COVID, and COVID certainly accelerating, you know, what we've saw in Beijing and what we saw in Tokyo, but the, you know, the Olympics is a diminished thing right now, not so with the World Cup. And yes, there are probably going to be some issues with Qatar, but then you come back raging in 26 with this North American thing that's just going to crush it. And it's not going to just crush it in your region. It's going to crush it all over the continent. And it's going to be a huge deal. And again, Baltimore's part of it.
Should we celebrate? Is there anything that could screw this up? I mean, I've been wanting to ask you all weekend. I'm going to ask everybody. But is there anything that gets in the way of Baltimore actually having World Cup games now that they're a part of the D.C. bid? It feels to me like this was found money. Like this is – there's nothing that can screw this up in my mind right now, and I don't want to get that excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a done deal, and obviously there's a lot of – there's competition out there from a lot of different markets, but you also make a good point about the expanded field, that there's a way to sort of spread the candy around here a little bit, that yes, there's going to be big events in SoFi. There's going to be big events in MetLife. There's going to be stuff in Orlando. Some of these things are a given, but there is enough to go around. I still feel like – you know, it's not just going to be early stage stuff, that, you know, Baltimore should be getting a little bit more of that, but we'll see. You know, again, this decision is coming down, you know, fairly soon. It's probably going to be in that May, June kind of timetable that we get some clarity on this. And, you know, going to be fairly soon here, but yeah, it just, you know, you can't guarantee anything, but I think it looks real strong. Cause again, you can't have this whole event come and not be part of, you know, the nation's capital in some regard.
Eric Fisher is here. He's getting me excited. Make me want to live another 4 years through all of this. If we're going to have World Cup soccer games in my hometown, he is with Sport Business. We usually talk baseball. And if you're watching out on video, you can see Lou Gehrig and a whole bunch of baseballs behind him. But what do you got? I mean, we're a couple of weeks into this. You know, the Orioles, obviously John Means. We could sit here and talk about the on the field part of all of this. And Adam Jones is now uppity because the Orioles have screwed him too. So get in line. For the season itself and for the Orioles, I mean, we were out in Oakland last week. I'd never seen less people at a baseball game than what I saw there on the three games, literally after the opener. I had a young man on last week who wrote a piece at The Ringer about Oakland losing football, losing basketball. You talk about the business of sports and where we are with baseball at this point. How many bad franchises are they? You know, how many Baltimores and Tampas and Oaklands and sort of the before the Montreals and the Nashvilles and the Vegas to start coming in? It can't get much worse than it is in Oakland right now.
Yeah, there's actual – this is different than some other sort of external factors sort of coming in and coalescing in a bad way. This is actual, you know, what I would consider sort of operational malfeasance here, that if you sort of look at what the A's have done in jettisoning all of their top players and raising ticket prices and – you know, not sort of staffing the building correctly and operating the building correctly during game days and everything. It's like, you know, they talk about being rooted in Oakland. I'm sure as heck not seeing it. This seems to me all sort of wired in to sort of lay tracks to go to Vegas. That's been my gut for a while. It remains my gut feeling. You know, they claim they're still on parallel tracks here, but you look at sort of, you know, the issues they've already been having in Oakland, and they basically have said they got to basically pull an inside straight at this point and have every single regulatory and legal step along the process go perfectly for anything to even remotely be possible in Oakland. Meanwhile, they've placed bids on five different pieces of property in Vegas. Everything's simpler to do. Everything's cheaper to do in Vegas. This all just sort of feels like a drawn out beginning of the end with that. In Northern California there. And meanwhile, the fans are suffering. You know, you've seen it yourself. The A's, it may not be the largest fan base, but they're loud, they're vibrant, they're committed, they're passionate. And they're just sort of getting stepped on right now. And it's really unfortunate.
Well, it's not any different than the Orioles getting stepped on, you know, $30 million payroll and Means is hurt. They're not really trying. But they are laying the, hey, we're going to be good in a couple of years. They're hanging that little carrot out there for you. At least the A's aren't even doing that. And I don't know. The Tampa situation is much better when every time I hear about them, they're going to play games in Montreal and all this other stuff going
Montreal
on.
Montreal thing is dead. The split season thing that got killed last fall. So now Tampa is still trying to figure out something in their local market. They actually draw pretty well on TV, and it's a good sized TV market. It's just a matter of Stu Sternberg, the team owner there, opening the wallet. Something could get done tomorrow. And actually, they were really close on a deal in Ybor City on the Tampa side of the bay a couple of years ago. Had a 50-50 deal essentially worked out with the politicians there, and Stu didn't want to cover his end of the bill. And
well, it feels to me like if you're not willing to do that there, then you really are beating the drum to leave. I mean, they have been there for 30 years, and they're not a market factor for as good as they've been in a place where the weather's good and people play baseball all day, and that right. may be part and parcel of where the stadium is. Well, then if you believe in the market, then you change that and make it better. And if you don't believe in the market, you go to Nashville. You go somewhere else. But to sit forever, I mean, the Orioles don't have that. The Orioles just have sheer incompetence.
It gets back to I've told you, I'm going to tell you the same thing I've been telling you for at least 2 years here, that particularly as Peter is getting older and sicker here, that, you know, the control transfer has happened, that John Angelos is the day-to-day lead executive for the Orioles. And what I would really love to see, much like what we saw in Chicago and Houston and some of these others, even though the team is bad right now, for him to basically go to every Rotary Club meeting, every Chamber of Commerce meeting, everything, and just
never
come
gonna happen. It's just never going to happen.
Be on this journey. This is what Jim Crane did. This is what Tom Ricketts did. And, you know, we can debate those executives and those teams, but they were out there beating the bush, trying to get people to come along with them on the journey. And we're seeing nothing, none of that with the Orioles.
Does it have to be the owner? I ask you this.
It has to be the owner. Yes. I mean, certainly you can have help from team president. You can have help from general manager. You can have help along people. But this is part of the issue with the A's, that John Fisher, nobody ever sees him. You got Dave Cavill out there kind of beating the bushes, and that's great. And Dave's got a lot of energy and, you know, he's trying to get things done, but he's not the money. At the end of the day, people know how and where the bills get paid. And again, it's got to be ownership leading the charge.
Well, to me, so much of this is about business. And that's where I lose a lot of the fan base that doesn't own a business or isn't in that space or that networking space or that CEO space that I've been in for 30 years, that I've never run into an Oriole representative at any of these places. Good times, bad times, salespeople, people
that's
just fronting
good.
The organization, shaking hands, inviting people out. Here's a couple tickets for the game on Saturday. Bring your wife down. Come back to the ballpark. Now, the Orioles have done this 1992 prices. You'll get a couple cheapskates to come out for $10 because they want to come out and smell it, but it hasn't in any way been any sort of panacea. You know what I mean? Like that's not a strategy to give the tickets away for $5. The strategy is to make people feel invested in the team again and
build an actual connection, even if they stink now. And again, the Cubs were bad. The Astros were bad. But they built a connection and tried to get people to come along with them on the journey. Come with me, you know, we're going to be on this multi-year journey. Come with us together. And they took a lot of slings and arrows along the way. But when those two teams in particular ended up winning titles, and they're still pretty good now, people ended up sort of feeling invested because they were along with them and they felt like there was a relationship and a connection with that ownership. I mean, you had Tom Ricketts showing up at Cubs convention every single year, in addition to all those Chamber of Commerce luncheons. Like, I'm going to sit here and take fan questions for an hour. Nothing's off limits. You know, Orioles have never done anything like that.
And probably never will. Eric Fisher
probably never will.
Yeah, it's sport business, and that's why it's never going to get better. That's what I've said to people. Until they change, they can't figure out Adam Jones right now. You know what I mean? They can't get along with the only player that they've had who didn't ever want out of here, who didn't, other than Markakis, who was also a pretty good soldier here for a period of time. Everybody else left and has been long since forgotten. And, I mean, you're familiar with all this. How about the Nationals,
Eric?
Well,
and that's particularly bad, because think about what Adam Jones did and said after Freddie Gray. That's even worse. Like, given how important a figure Adam Jones was at some of the worst moments in the city's history, to not keep engaged with Adam Jones at a meaningful level, that's malfeasance right there.
Well, it's who they are, but I also, in speaking to how it changes, they think winning, they literally think we're going to win someday and you're all going to come. And this has been their philosophy. Yeah, I mean, you covered the team before the Nationals existed. Now the Nationals are going to have an ownership change, right? Like
right, they're in their own transition now. That's exactly right.
Give me as you see that, because you have spent hours of your life here on my airwaves alone talking about this $200-400 million worth of money that the Angelos family owes the Washington Nationals franchise, and right. how that's going to factor into a $2 million transfer in some way.
Two billion.
I'm sorry. My bad. B for M. $2 billion transfer where there's, I don't know, 20% of the value of the franchise is in dispute based on money that they've been siphoned for now going on 16 years.
Yeah. So that's going to, so essentially you basically have existential questions now about both franchises, and you have basically the, both of the old Lions between Ted Lerner and Peter Angelos essentially dying out. And you have a situation now in both franchises where, John Angelos, we don't even know what he's thinking. And Mark Lerner appears to be, you know, he's had some health issues and some other things going on that, you know, maybe thinking about what is next for him in life. And that's all very fair and appropriate. But as this sale, you know, and they've retained Allen and Company, this big deal firm that essentially transacts every major franchise happening out there. And they're doing the Broncos right now, same sort of thing. This is exactly right. If Ted Leonsis or anybody else is going to buy into this franchise and take it on to lead into the next era, this situation is going to have to be resolved. And not only is it going to have to be resolved in a short-term sense, because what everything you reference is strictly about the 2011 to 2016 media rights. This thing came up in 2011 where they were basically trying to set what the media rights was going to be for that 5-year period. And everything that has happened in the 10 plus years since is still litigating 2011 to 2016. So actually 2017 to 2021 is still not yet been resolved. And now we're in 2022, and 22 to 26 has got to be settled out as well. And so, so that whole Masson question has got to be resolved both for now and going forward.
Well, the damage being done, just in general, where they don't have broadcasters that can see fly balls at this point. I mean, the broadcasts are unwise. They're a disgrace. I mean, to be a broadcaster, to be a part of that.
Why the league isn't sitting on them about that? I've asked about this. I'm sure others have as well. Just can't seem to get a good answer. You know,
well, the league is poorly run. I mean, can we just say that Major League Baseball is really poorly run?
They've had their issues for sure. And on this one, given that we have now 2 years of protocol experience, given that we have vaccines, we have boosters, there is a way to do this and control and minimize the COVID risk. I get that 2 years ago we were in a vastly different place, but a lot has happened in the 2 years since then, and every other RSN has figured out how to do this and keep their guys safe. And we all want people to be safe. I get all of that. But for Masson to be left at the station when the train's already gone and everybody else is on it, you know, this is where New York has got to step in and say, come on, you know, listen, this is not – you know,
well,
this
New York
is not
didn't step in when they didn't have HD. New York isn't stepping in to give any Oriole right. fan in market rights so I can actually watch the game on my screen here. Like, I even if you pay for it, you can't take it with you. And there's no one to call. And the media has no one to ask questions to. And the fans just whistle past the graveyard and move on to the NFL draft on Sunday or the Preakness or fishing or whatever they're doing. The fact that New York never got involved with Peter in litigating this, I know they've gotten involved, but they never gotten an outcome, that everything's always dangling when you're doing business with Peter Angelos.
Well, and everything to your point, I've read literally thousands of pages of paper about this. This is all getting litigated and contested in that way. But, you never have a situation where anything is done publicly, like where you've got Rob Manfred or one of his key lieutenants going out and talking to people, somebody like me, and just like, hey, what is the deal with masks and why aren't they sending people on the road? You're not having any external public level pressure. Everything that we're describing is happening. It's not even really in a courtroom because they haven't even really been in a courtroom on this thing lately. This is all just paper going back and forth, and the billable hours, you know, the meter still running on that. Nothing is, there's no external pressure being placed on them to just like, hey guys, just do better, do better.
Well, Eric Fisher is here. He's doing better at Sport Business. You can find him out on the internet. Long time at Sports Business Journal. Before that, at the Washington Times, covering all things local. Last thing, just to set sail here. Anything on Dan Snyder that you wanna give me at this point? I mean, the owner of the Ravens has been running from me because he doesn't want to have questions from me about that, right? Like, so all of these guys, the other 31 partners, are all hiding under a rock right now in regard to whatever Dan Snyder has done to besmirch the shield.
Yeah, so this is going to be really interesting to sort of play forward here. I will say that it's sort of a shame that what really seems to be ratcheting up the pressure right now is the allegation that he has basically been skimming from his other team partners. That has sort of reached a level that all of this other stuff and all of this horrible experience that these various women had over the years, that couldn't get it to rise to that level. That in and of itself is unfortunate, that it's taking this to rise up to a whole other level. But unfortunately, that's where we are. But if it is in fact proven that Dan Snyder was skimming off his other owners, there's going to be a forced sale. There's no way that the other team owners will tolerate that. Again, why we couldn't get, you know, any of this sort of attention when you had all this other harassment.
Won't that be great to pop the zit though? I mean, it's kind of like when the old man dies here and the baseball team moves to somebody that actually wants it, that wants to show up. I mean, with the Washington thing, for all of them, they need to pop this zit at some point. I mean, at the end, he can't remain. We all sort of know that, but he doesn't know that. And he has flaunted and broken all the rules of showing up and not being around and his wife's involvement. And, he's really, really in nefarious, dodgy cat. And the so fact that the NBA could get rid of a guy who was a bad guy quickly, that this isn't going that way, I would think the owners are even more dug in, knowing them, you know, knowing how nasty they are in general.
But again, that the line on that is if one of them is stealing from the other, that is probably the red line. Not any of this other stuff, unfortunately, that, you know, the notion of other owners stealing from me, that could be the red line. But again, that's got to be proven and that's in dispute. You've got basically house oversight and this former employee saying one thing, the team saying another. This is still being sort of played out. But yeah, this is a gut feeling. My gut feeling is that this is potentially the beginning of the end, because I don't even know how you come back from this. That, you know, even if these Friedman allegations they proved to be unfounded. You know, the same sort of thing. These guys were 31st in attendance last year. It's not going to be better this year. The team is probably going to be in that same sort of 8-9, 7-10 kind of morass they've been forever. And as you well know, being sort of in that middle, it's that's the worst state of all. It's worse than 3-14, and it's certainly worse than 16-1. They're sort of in that middle mediocre range that they've been forever. They've never won 11 games with Dan Snyder in all these years. They've only been to the playoffs 6 times in 22 years. I don't know how it gets better on or off the field for them.
Well, pressure from the inside that maybe they gave to Jerry Richardson at one point, but they haven't. And they would have loved to have gotten Mark Davis out a long time ago, but they couldn't. And they took Stan Kroenke's money and ran with it. He is Eric Fisher, covering all things Sport Business. The last time I saw him, we were high above Inglewood about 8 weeks ago. Maybe one day we'll be high above Camden Yards. Eric, it's always great to visit with you, man. I'm glad I called you on soccer. And, man, we ran through the whole Baltimore-Washington gamut. And hopefully soon we'll get a milk. Shake Shack or something soon. All right.
Sounds great.
There he is. Eric Fisher joining us here from Sport Business. You can follow him out on Twitter. No one covers the business of sport better. That's why it's called Sport Business. And he's local as well. And pinch me on this World Cup thing. I am talking to more and more people about the potential that 4 years from now, we're going to have real World Cup games here in Baltimore. So that is exciting. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.